The following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcast Network. For advertising information or to find more great podcasts, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com and follow us on Twitter at @RealTheUnderdog.
Yeah, welcome to another episode of the Functional Sportsaholic, or as we like to call it, the Sports Talk Revolution. We are proud partners of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. You can also find us on Podcast One. I am happy to be here on another episode with Sam Van Dam. This is Sean Bryan. Sam, how you doing, buddy?
What up, Goo? What's going on?
You call me Goo?
Is that Goo.
Yeah, you know what? I think you did that a couple weeks ago, and I kind of put it out of mind.
I called you Bubs.
Bubs, and now I'm Goo.
Yeah. Now you're Goo. I'm just trying to go with words that, like, you know, trying to start trends.
Yeah. Don't jump on a trend. You start the trend. You drive the bus, right?
Yeah, what up, Goo?
All right. Not much. I watched that Leaving Neverland this week. I know you know that because I was texting you all week about it.
Well, here's the thing, man. If that's Neverland, I'm never leaving.
Oh my gosh. So I know you, like, you, I was telling my wife that I was relaying some stories. I guess you got in some Instagram beef with some people over the thing. But Michael Jackson has a soft spot in your heart.
I love Michael Jackson, man. And, you know, if there was some hard evidence, you know, that would point to something, then I'll listen. But, you know, he's not here to defend himself. And the thing is, these are stories. I mean, I could sit at home and make up stories about somebody. It doesn't mean that they're true, you know?
I believe every word of it.
I know you do,
every
man.
Every word of
you're
it.
Gullible. You're gullible, man.
Yeah, hey, man, you haven't watched it, right? You refuse to watch it?
I refuse to watch it because of Wade Robson. If it was too, like, of the other million children that he had sleep in his bed with him, you know, okay, but not these two goofballs that have went on trial to defend. This is a whole, I mean, we could literally do 2 hours on this.
I know. We go back and forth.
I am passionate.
I know you're passionate. There's a lot of people who are passionate about it. And, you know, I was always, you know, I kind of had my reservations one way or another. I have no doubts. I have no doubts about it.
I mean, I'm not a Michael Jackson apologist. I'll never say that. But what I don't like is, you know, the guy is not here to defend himself. And when he was here, he did defend himself and was, you know, wasn't convicted of anything. So my biggest beef is with any of this is with the parents. Because he's a weird dude. I would never let my child ever sleep with anybody, any adult, you know, that's, you know, not me or their mother, you know, or maybe a grandparent, you know, but even then, you know, I don't know. I'm a little weird about that. So I don't know why people would let their kids go off and spend weeks with this man and sleep at.
Whole thing is very weird. But anyway, let's get into sports. I was looking before moving forward. I was looking at BovadaSportsbook.com, and I see that Duke is the odds-on favorite according to Bovada. So, you know, I know you're
to
watching
win the
them
whole thing.
To win the whole thing. Yeah, to win the whole thing. So,
interesting.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Because what I thought was interesting is the second highest in terms of odds. The second highest was Gonzaga, and then Virginia.
Virginia might be my pick.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, just they can shoot. They can flat out shoot. Gonzaga is just they're never going to win the whole thing. You know, they're cute,
right?
And it's always a good thing, and they dominate their conference, and they'll make an Elite Eight run, maybe a Final Four run, but they're never going to win the whole thing. I mean, they've been in this thing for a while now. I guess maybe one day they'll slip through, but Duke, if they can play on all cylinders, is that no one can beat them. The problem with them is their outside shooting is suspect, and that gets them in a lot of trouble. But, you know, I've been watching them tonight, and you really see what they were missing with Zion. And I haven't I would never say I'm a Zion. I'm not a hater because obviously I'm a Duke fan and I want to see them do well. I think the overhype sometimes I think has driven me away a little bit from Zion. But tonight he's lived up to every little bit of hype and he's been the difference maker. So
is he going to be the MVP of the NBA next season?
Yeah. And I feel bad for the kid.
Yeah, it's not his fault.
He shouldn't have these unrealistic expectations placed on him. He's not asking for this stuff. He seems like a really good kid that's got a good head on his shoulder. So, I want the best for him.
Yeah, but I mean,
Virginia is solid, man. They got a real good mix. You know, you start to see at this time of the year, you start to see some of these teams with a good mix of youth and veterans, maybe a couple freshmen, sophomore, but mixed with some juniors and seniors. Those are the teams that are really difficult. North Carolina is really good. I could see them winning the whole thing too.
Yeah,
they have a nice mix of a really good freshman class, but they have juniors and seniors that are kind of their anchors. And that's a little bit what Duke's missing. Because they are so youth reliant, but their youth is so good. So,
yeah, and we'll going back to Gonzaga. So I agree, man. They're just never going to win anything. And I was surprised to see that their odds were so high because of that. Like I'm just surprised that anybody be putting money down on Gonzaga. You know, at +600 to win anything. But you know specifically about Gonzaga, I think it goes back to the argument that people make about the non-Power 5 schools in the NCAA, which I do think it's a valid argument in that, you know, UCF, my alma mater, I'm a big proponent of giving teams, you know, fair chances or at least a path. And my big issue with the NCAA isn't that the Power 5, as I just, you know, I'm repeating myself from what I said, you know, in the last months of the show and everything. My issue isn't that the NCAA isn't giving a path to the non-Power 5 schools. My issue is that they're lying about saying that they have a path.
Right.
So if you don't want to give them a path and just call a spade, say it. Like, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care. And do I think that UCF would have beaten Alabama 2 years ago? No, I don't think so. You know, not when a game mattered. They beat in the bowl game, they beat an Auburn team 2 years ago that was, you know, basically just trying not to get injured because everybody was trying to make the NFL. And then last season, they would have beaten LSU. They would have taken care of business there, but their quarterback was blown out. Everybody was talking about how their defensive back sat out the game. UCF's quarterback was out.
Right.
I mean, come on, guys, give me a break. And they still put up like something like, you know, 35 points on it. But anyway, but you know, the Gonzaga thing is like, yeah, you can run through your conference just like UCF or whoever, Memphis or whoever, Boise State, they can run through their conference in the NCAA football. But when you get to a playoff and you have to like start getting better, you know, playing better and better teams night in and night out, it gets tougher. Like, you know, the Gonzaga, they generally make the Sweet 16 and they start to get bounced in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight because they're playing good teams night in and night out at that point. And it's hard to win consistently on that level when you haven't had to put your bodies through that kind of toll in a season. I just don't know how a team like, you know, a regular team like that can really prepare when you're playing the back half of your schedule, you know, with basically conference games against weaker opponents. And by the way, they biffed it in their conference championship.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, I think Gonzaga, I mean, they're always a good team. They're solid. I just think that it's, you know, when you get down to that Final Four, you know, that's when the elite D1 teams usually just, and no matter how good the story is, at the end of the day, the team with the best horses usually wins. And that's where Gonzaga, you know, they get a bunch of random guys, but, you know, good players, but not, you know, not five-star guys like knocking down the doors to Gonzaga. And it's a good story, but I really don't think they're ever gonna win anything.
No, they're not. And that's fine. You know, they can be they can be like the number one team in the country for weeks on end like they were this year and get bounced in, you know. I'm gonna guess they get bounced in the eight. I think they'll get upset, quote unquote, in the Elite Eight this year. That's my guess.
Right. And I mean, that's a great thing. I mean, it's a small school in the you know, Spokane, Washington. It's a great thing. You know, they remind me a lot when Boise State had that like run in football.
Oh yeah.
You know, where Peterson was there and they just like were fun to watch. They had the unique, like, turf. I'm sure they still do.
Yeah, the blue turf.
Yeah, but, you know, they're fun to watch. But you knew that, like, and granted it was football, but you knew they weren't going to win anything. You know, they weren't going to win the national championship. But it's still a good story, and that's what I think about Gonzaga.
All right, man. So the NFL free agency is popping off. I haven't gone in and checked, the futures and everything. I haven't looked through Bovada. And they're probably not changing too much. Those things usually start to shake out, you know, after free agency, after the draft, and we're still kind of in the midst of it. But you're right after we recorded our episode last week, which we recorded on Thursday night last week. Sam, you texted me and basically said that Antonio Brown was going to the Bills. And I laughed and laughed right. and laughed. And I said, you know, I thought because we said he was going to the Raiders. Now, of course, he ended up right. going to the Raiders. But the Bills were going to go in and they were going to make that trade. But Antonio right. Brown basically wouldn't sign the extension with them. But anyway, he's in mm-hmm. Oakland and everything kind of shook out exactly how I thought it would, which was to say, like last week, just to remind everybody, I said, you know, Antonio Brown, I think he was looking at 36 or 38 mil in remaining salary, not guaranteed, but remaining salary for Pittsburgh. Now, if it's another organization like a Washington, like a New York Jets, like a, I don't know, the New England Patriots. You can think of mm-hmm. any of these teams that routinely like churn out players, and the Patriots aren't big cutters, but that's kind of where I'm going with this. If it was any other team than the Steelers, I would say, yeah, you got to go chase the guarantee. But the Steelers, if you just do the right thing, they're going to pay you. So right. I know there's no guarantees, but the Steelers are about as big of a guarantee as you can. Plus, the Steelers will negotiate your contract when you have 1 year left. So he would have played 2 years right. out and then gotten a renegotiated deal. So what did he trade that for? He traded this for a contract that says $50 million, but in guarantees from Oakland, their guarantees are only something like $30 million. And right. you know, he's locked up for another few years. And I just don't see it working out there, man. I think he's going to get waived maybe after next season. And I don't think he's mm-hmm. going to sniff the money he would have received if he had just stayed with the Steelers. I don't love the move for him. Now, let me say this. I also don't know his relationship with Roethlisberger. You know, you shouldn't be forced to work with somebody you hate. I don't know how bad that relationship was or whose fault or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, just from a purely statistical and financial point of view, I don't like what Antonio Brown did, but what do you think, Sam?
Well, you know, I was listening to Get Paid this morning, actually, and you guys hit on a lot of key things. Number one being, it was not Derek Carr. What's his name?
Yeah, it was Derek Carr.
Yeah, Derek Carr. Yeah. Okay, what was his brother's name?
David.
Dave, okay. I had the two mixed up. Okay, well, Derek Carr's not a throw-it-down-the-field guy.
By the way, the fact that you mix those two up tells you exactly everything you need to know about the quarterback situation there, honestly.
Right, right. He's kind of a check-down guy. He's not really a deep ball guy, and that's where Antonio Brown is, you know, most – you know, that's where you want him at. That's where he was utilized a lot in Pittsburgh, and you just kind of wonder, you know, everything's fine and all that now, but you know, you also know Gruden doesn't play, and I think this is going to go sour. I really do. I think, you know, 5 games into the season, you're probably going to see, you're not going to see Antonio like, Brad said, dancing around like a 14-year-old on Instagram.
Yeah.
On
Instagram. The personalities, given everything that we've seen from Antonio Brown recently, the personality just does not seem to be a fit. You know, Gruden and Brad made a great point in that podcast. Thanks for the plug on that way, by the way, Sam. I love when you plug.
I love that show, man. I love that show. I think Brad is hilarious.
He's so grumpy.
He's so grumpy, and he's such a curmudgeon, but I love it.
He is. He's
I love
funny.
It.
Yeah, what did he say? He said something like, you know, getting Antonio Brown is like living in a duplex and then owning $1 million chandelier. It's like, what the hell's the point? What's
right,
the point?
Right. He's money.
Yeah, man, but like, I mean, he hit the nail on the head with the Mac, the Khalil Mack thing. It's like Khalil Mack is everything you want your franchise player to be, and they don't pay him. And then you trade him off to Chicago. Now, when they made that trade, I'm sure they thought that they were going to get an early pick for him, and they didn't. But, you know, they trade him, and then, you know, the Raiders. Another thing I don't like about it, now they kept their first-round picks, which is great, but giving up a third and a fifth-round pick, like I saw some articles out there that said that, Oakland fleeced, quote-unquote fleeced Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is going to do things with that third round pick. Now, Oakland, you know, they have a new Mike Mayock is in there, the old guy, the draft analyst from NFL.com. NFL.com, but NFL Network. I really don't know what the plan is here. I'll be very interested to see what happens in the draft. I don't love it. It seems like Oakland is just kind of, you know, filling holes here and there.
It kind of seems like they, you know, they went and got rid of some of their hosses last year, caught so much crap for it that now they're like, oh, we got to get somebody in here. Like, we need to get another, you know, prolific guy. We need to get another dynamic guy. When you should have kept Khalil Mack, who was a captain on all those shitty teams, just did his job. And Gruden gets there and is like, yeah, I don't like him.
Doesn't even meet with him.
Yeah, you don't even meet with him. Like, and then he goes to Chicago and he's beasting it. Like, shut, like, you're terrible.
Yeah.
So I don't think this is going to go well. I saw you had on Twitter, this needs to be the, you know, hard knocks. You know, let's switch it from, we wanted the Jets, but let's move that circus on over to Oakland.
Yeah, plus we'll get the Jets next season. So.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
when they're not allowed to say no, we'll get the Jets. But
because now they're gonna have Levy on there and all that.
Ooh,
other stuff.
But you know what? The Jets, that Rex Ryan season with the Jets, they might actually be able to say no. I don't remember how long ago that was, but that's one of the factors too. So but you know what? The Redskins would be a great not this season because of you know, the quarterback situation there. But when Alex Smith comes back next season, because the Redskins are not going to make the playoffs this year. Assuming Gruden, and I think Gruden will keep his job because, you know, he knows how to work with that front office and with Snyder. I don't think he'll lose his job, especially after a season where they lost, you know, their starting quarterback. But they'd be an interesting one. But I think it's going to be hard because of all of the drama around the name, the Redskins. I don't think NFL Films will touch Washington because of that specifically.
Yeah.
Anyway, but man, the Raiders would be so good.
It would be so good.
To go from the last year's Cleveland Browns to this year's Raiders,
And I feel like we could watch Cleveland again, to be honest with you. I mean, with Odell
with
there now.
Oh my gosh, I would love it.
You know, a whole new kind of regime and all that stuff, and you don't have Walrus Man there. That's the only real downfall.
Yeah, that head coach and the interaction with him and Baker Mayfield, I could watch they should put that on Netflix. Like, I would stream episodes of that.
Yeah, it's a reality show. Yeah. So.
Yep. Yeah, man.
Interesting. What do you think about Beckham?
I was going to say just that. Yeah, speaking of Cleveland, Odell Beckham going there. You know, I don't. So I know there's a guy I used to work with at my previous job. He's a big Cleveland fan. And every time the Browns do something big, like, he's in love, like, with the move and everything. And usually I'm pretty critical. Like, I liked what Cleveland was doing when they were just accumulating picks and doing the patient thing. Now, the problem with that is that their previous general manager, I think he was doing the right thing, but he was picking the wrong players. And you got to do both. So then they switched philosophy, and I think this is indicative of the organization because Haslam is just a goofball as an owner. He is like Dan Snyder 2.0 when Snyder was like in the late 90s and owning the team initially, like signing all these players, making all these splashes and everything. I don't like it. I like Mayfield. I like Mayfield has, you know, a big enough ego and enough self-confidence in him that, like, all of, like, the chirping, you know, all of the weird stuff, like, with Haslam and stuff, he'll be able to tune that out. I'm not worried about that at all. And then I think that they got the right head coach in there. And they have a nice defensive coordinator in there, too. I hate to see Greg Williams leave that, you know, that team because they were playing so well, but I think they'll be okay. But, you know, the Beckham thing, it's like they're trading a first and a third. You know, I don't think either team won that deal. And I don't know why the Giants would have made that trade because Beckham is what makes that offense go. I guess they think now it's Saquon Barkley and you have a point if you look at the stats. But Eli Manning is a bad. I'm not saying like he's slightly worse or anything. He's a bad quarterback when Odell Beckham's not on the field. And he's a pretty serviceable quarterback when he is on the field. So getting rid of Beckham for New York, I don't get it. For the Browns, I don't love that they traded, you know, a high amount of draft pick, but because that previous general manager, you know, stocked so much away, They had some capital. I would have preferred them to see continue to work the draft like the Patriots continuously do and like the Ravens continuously do, and they're always relevant. Why do you think that is? It's because they manage the system effectively. Right. You know, the Browns are making splashes. It's not long-term sustainable, but pairing Beckham with Mayfield, I think that quarterback relationship and receiver relationship is going to be a really good one.
Right.
People probably forget this, but Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry are good friends. They went through LSU together. That's going to be an interesting dynamic. You know, both of them are fiery players, but I think both of them can talk each other down because they understand each other. The one piece I think Cleveland's missing right now is, I'd say two pieces in terms of skill players. I think that the tight end, and I like Njoku, but he needs to, you know, he gets his opportunities in the red zone, but you know, with all the opportunities he gets, he doesn't catch enough touchdown passes. So he needs to convert those a little bit more. He needs to take the next step from being, you know, Njoku to like being more towards like a Kelce or a Gronkowski, which is easy to say, hard to do.
Right, right.
But, you know, if you're getting like red zone targets out the ass in this offense, which he did last year, you need to pull down more touchdowns. So I'd say that. And then I felt like they needed a big wide receiver, like a tall possession type guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are easier to find. Beckham and Landry can both stretch the field and they can work over the middle. So, I mean, this Browns team, I think they might win the division, to be honest with you.
Man, I think that's what Cleveland, you know, you talk about, you know, people doing kind of the slow, patient grind. I think Cleveland's like, they're like, listen, we got a young guy, you know, he rallies people up. We're just trying to get some excitement in our team. And, you know, if you got you and other people saying they could win the division, if we would have said that about Cleveland like 2 years ago, you know, no one would believe that. So they're obviously doing some things right. Is it going to be sustainable? Probably not. But at least it lights a little bit of fire under the Cleveland Browns fans and get some excited.
Hey man, I'm rooting for Cleveland, you know. They're one of my
I am, man. I love Baker. Baker's my guy.
Baker. And you were in on him early.
I was
slower to turn, but I turned. See, I can admit when I was wrong. I was. I can, man. Not a lot of people do.
No, I know. I know you do. And you weren't hating on him. You were more worried about the fanfare. Kind of because he is a little bit, you know, cocky and aggressive, and you know that area, they're a little bit more mild mannered.
Yeah, I didn't see the city fit. You're right.
Yeah, you didn't see the city fit, but they're dying for something. They got their Cavs, you know, championship. Now that whole team doesn't give a crap about anything else except for Cleveland.
Yeah,
Browns
and
football.
I don't think that team has had a quarterback since maybe Bernie Kosar. I'm probably missing like one guy in there.
I don't think so.
You know, I mean, the name that keeps coming to mind is Tim Couch, who was obviously a flame out number one pick. But there had to have been one more guy in there.
I don't know, man. Remember, have you seen that jersey that like they kept changing like the names on it? Like, and it goes like all the way down like 2024, you know, quarterbacks or whatever.
Yeah, but I'm talking like when Belichick was there, I don't think Kosar was the quarterback and those teams were okay. Gosh, that might have been like Testaverde or something. I couldn't tell you. Anyway, let's not delve into 1994 Cleveland Browns here. Let's keep it moving. Yeah. Hey, everybody, if you like this show, you are going to love the official Lakers podcast on Podcast One Sportsnet. Join Emmy-winning sportscaster Susie Schuster along with producer Aaron Larsoul this week as the All-Star team faces off against the LA Clippers, the Denver Nuggets, and the Boston Celtics. Download the official Lakers podcast every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Le'Veon Bell going to the Jets, which I kind of thought would happen, but I don't like it. And so everybody who's like kind of anticipating my upcoming 2019 Fantasy Football Almanac, I can tell you this is a spoiler alert right here. I don't like Le'Veon Bell in New York, but what do you think about that?
I think Le'Veon Bell is a little bit overrated. I think he's more of a system running back, as you saw last year with Connor. And Connor came in and basically it wasn't much of a drop-off.
And then he
was a rookie, right? You know, so
well, not a
or
rookie,
a second-year guy.
Yeah, something
whatever,
like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so But I mean, much wasn't expected of him. And, you know, everyone kind of projected these big drop offs except for you. And you were like, you know what, if you're in fantasy, pick him up, because he's going to, you know, put up close to the same numbers as Le'Veon. And he did. The drop off wasn't that much. You know, maybe they missed a few explosive plays that Le'Veon would have made throughout the year, but overall he was super solid. And, you know, I think Le'Veon, I don't think he's going to have this great, you know, season next year with the Jets.
Well, you know, my guide is basically, let me rephrase that. You know, the whole thought process behind the fantasy football guide that I put together, that I've been playing this way for years, and I've seen that other people in the other, you know, draft experts, quote unquote draft experts, never do, is they never take into account the offensive system, right? And so, you know, when I said James Conner last year would be able to put up maybe not the same numbers as Le'Veon Bell, but pretty comparable numbers and be a good fantasy running back, it's because the system was there for him. Right. The same reason I don't like Le'Veon Bell going to New York is because Gase has not done well with his running backs in terms of carry distribution. Like, his whole career as an offensive coordinator and his systems going into New York, I'm sorry, I just don't see it working out in terms of Le'Veon Bell numbers. And so what's going to end up happening, and the same thing happened last year with David Johnson in Arizona. Everybody was slamming me because my guide had David Johnson. I think my initial rankings were 19 for him at running back, the 19th best running back, I think. And I moved him up a little bit, but I think he ended up about 12th overall on my draft board, maybe in the 15th. And everybody's like, whoa, where's David Johnson? I said, look, man, he's playing in a system that's not going to be great for him. I think right. Mike McCoy was the coordinator at that point. I'm like, dude, like, McCoy, his running backs don't score well. They just don't.
Right.
The same thing with Ronald Jones in Tampa Bay last year. Like, there was a lot of hype after he got drafted. Ronald Jones in a dirt cutter system is not going to produce. It's just not going to happen. Look at the numbers. The data's out there, and that's what I put in the book. Now, Ronald Jones, by the way, spoiler alert, I think he's going to be a massive sleeper in the Bruce Arians system. Because why? Because the Bruce Arians system is what propelled David Johnson forward, and they have a similar skill set. So there you go. There's a little nugget for you.
Man, you're giving out all this free advice.
I know.
These people, these lucky peasants.
Yeah, well,
just
I mean,
getting these
little tasters.
You know, these little corn kennels, you know, just throwing them out the back of the carriage.
Hey, man, got to lead them like the Pied Piper, right? Lead them to fantasy glory. Yeah. But the Le'Veon Bell thing, though, like Gase, you know, he's had Kenyon Drake, who I thought was pretty dynamic, and he's just a guy that splits carries, you know, his career. That's kind of his MO. So Le'Veon Bell, he'll be the starter there. The Jets offense, I think there'll be an improved offense, but Le'Veon Bell to me is not a first round running back. And I guarantee you when the rankings come out, he's going to be like in the top five, because that's just how fantasy football,
right?
You know, the universe works, and it's not the right way to do it. You know, thankfully you know, like I said, it's been working for me for like 23, however long I've been playing fantasy football, this philosophy has worked out well. Thankfully, it held true in my first publication year, and a lot of people were successful. But anyway, there's a little teaser. I didn't mean for that to be a little sales pitch for the draft guide, but I figured why not knock out two birds with one stone.
I got you, and I kind of set you up for it. But
yeah,
you know
no,
what?
No, I appreciate that.
I don't, you know, there's
you're giving me plugs everywhere, man. I appreciate that.
Plugging it around, but you know, here's the thing, like Yeah, I'm plugging it because it's the truth and it works. And, you know, I have gained a lot of knowledge just from your little nuggets that you keep throwing out there. So
I had a lot of people last year email me and they would say, again, not to toot my own horn here, I just think it's funny. They would be like, hey, man, I really like your book. You know, I'm definitely going to recommend it, but I'm going to recommend it after the season because I don't want any, you know, I'm competing against these people. And so like people that do stumble upon it, unfortunately, I don't get a lot of referrals because they like to keep it close to the vest, but it's all good. It's all good. Also, buddy, I'm going to plug, I have a partnership with the book coming up. I'm going to leave that out there. It's a good partnership. It's a good partnership for me. It's a good partnership for the other person. So,
perfect.
It'll be very, very good. There's going to be some cross statistical analytics there. It's going to be good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right.
Love it.
I'm still driving the boat, though. Obviously.
Of course.
Yeah. All right, let's move it to the NBA. So again, I was looking on old Bovada at the NBA odds. I like to check in on those, you know, the futures to who's going to win the championship. Wouldn't you know it, Golden State is the massive favorite, which we've been saying all year long. Doesn't, I don't care what the record is. They could be 50-40 if they're the 8th seed in the playoffs. I don't care. They're going to win the title. I don't care. But, you know, Milwaukee, who you were quite high on, Sam, and Toronto were tied for, you know, the next highest at plus 900. Golden State was minus 225. And then Houston was actually, to me, you know, they're not a surprise fourth, because if I was ranking in terms of championship, I'd probably put Houston four and then Boston five, maybe Philadelphia in there somewhere. But I was surprised that the public, you know, is allowing that number to be, you know, Houston's high enough, because I would think that Oklahoma City and Denver might be getting the hype, but it sounds like, you know, we have some lucid people out there. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Houston can just flat out score. You know, they are, you know, they're right behind Golden State in the scoring, you know, how they can score and how quickly they can score. And any team that can do that is a threat. And they also play pretty good defense. PJ Tucker's a really good defensive player. Obviously, Clint Capela. I think they're a better defensive team than Golden State. I just think Golden State has a little bit too much firepower. Now, it's going to be interesting with Golden State, because Boogie's really starting to not play well. Teams have kind of figured that out. And it's going to be real interesting what that rotation is, because he just can't play any defense. And he's slow on offense. And, it, you know, it may come a point where Steve Kerr is going to have to sit him. And we'll see how that goes. You know, what kind of effect that has on the team, you know, going through the playoffs.
Gosh, you know, I'm sorry that I should have mentioned this earlier when we were talking NCAA, but I read there was another BovadaSportsbook.com article about like the top college teams that were like bubble teams. And I don't think UCF is a bubble team, but I started talking to you about this guy, Taco, what's his face? What's his name? Taco what?
Taco Fall
from Senegal, the 7'6" center. And I looked at him, and usually when you see these 7'6" guys, they have like no like muscle on them. And not that this guy is like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal or anything, but like he was actually kind of filled out for a 7'6" guy. It's like one of the more filled out guys I'd ever seen. So I was like, oh gosh. I said, this guy, and I texted you right away. I was like, this guy. Yeah. Again, UCF, my alma mater. I was like, man, this is going to be like, this guy's going to get drafted. And you said, yeah, he'll be drafted, but he's complete garbage. He's complete garbage. He's like,
he is, man.
Yeah, I know. But like,
and I don't even know if he'll get drafted. I really don't think he's going to get drafted. I think he's going to get picked up by a team, but I don't think he'll get drafted. He's slow. He's a 4-year guy already, so he's already 22, 23. He's just going to start breaking down, you know, in a few years. I don't know if there's much of an NBA future for Mr. Taco.
So here's my I'm not arguing with you. I don't think he has a future either. But I thought this was an interesting discussion, because we started kind of going back and forth, and I laid off because I wanted to talk about it here. I think that, you know, the NBA has a bench, and they go what, to 15 active players on their bench? Is that right? Well, not on the bench, but 15 active, you know. On day-to-day, 15 active players.
Right.
And there are so many teams where that 15th person is either cycled in and out on 10-day contracts or just never sniffs the floor, right? So it's basically a wasted spot for, like, you know, 31 of the – or whatever, you know, however many teams, right? And I'm equating this with, to me, what Tim Tebow is as a quarterback in the NFL. I never thought Tim Tebow was going to be a quarterback, but I thought he's a guy, and I've said this on this podcast before, he's a guy that can get you a yard, a tough yard. And there's a spot on an NFL team for that. Even with all the fanfare and all this stuff that Tebow gets, Tebow's a guy that can get you a yard when it matters, because, you know, you just have to have that mentality, like go into the hole and just dig until you get those inches that you need.
Right.
So I always thought that the NFL, you know, they weren't progressive enough to figure this out. And I thought Belichick would have been the one to do it, but I just, you know, and I don't think he cared to do it. But you can get Tebow in and just put him in the game on, you know, a second and one late in the game and just sneak it and get a first down. Maybe not a second and one, because that's a good – That's a good over-the-top play, a deep pass play. But if you need like a fourth and one QB sneak, you know, sub in. If you're going to be sneaking it, sub in Tim Tebow. Like maybe not because I never say, hey, you never take Tom Brady off. You never take Drew Brees off. I say that all the time. But if you're a team like, I don't know, Jacksonville, or if you're a team like, I don't know, Tennessee, who's like 9-7, they need to win late in the year and they have a big fourth down, put Tebow in, man. Get that yard.
Right.
Don't let him throw the ball. Unless maybe like everybody's stacking the box and then maybe you can have him do that stupid jump pass that he did at UF that everybody went crazy for. I'm not saying he's a thrower. I'm not saying he's going to throw for a first down. I'm saying he'll be able to dig in, get you that first down on a quarterback sneak. And that's important. And people don't, you know, the NFL teams don't think situationally like that at the quarterback position. You see Peyton starting to do it, but I think he's doing it the wrong way in New Orleans. Like I said, don't ever take Drew Brees off the field. Now, this taco guy, the point I was making to you, is like he's 7'6". He's not a complete liability. He's a liability. Don't get me wrong. He's not a complete liability. My thought is, why don't you just put him in for inbound passes with like less than a second left in a quarter or a half or a game?
That's they're not going to have a guy on the team just to do that.
Why not? That's what I'm saying. Why not? You got 50. You got a 15th guy who's never going to sniff the floor. Why not put a guy? You can get some use out of them. That's an important
thing.
Because
you may need to go to the end of your bench. I mean, you never know. Like, and
what if like everybody gets in a fight and gets suspended?
I'd rather go get a stiff off the street and, you know, like have him throw the ball and I'm not going to pay.
No, I'm not saying throw the ball in. I'm saying defending the inbound pass.
Oh,
see.
I don't know, man.
I'm telling you, man. It's new. It's new age stuff, baby.
You know what Taco Fall's gonna be doing in 2 years? He's gonna be the highest paid employee at Target because he's gonna be changing all the light bulbs up on the top of the ceiling and dusting all the vents. Okay, Taco Fall is gonna be the MVP of Target. Okay, like. That's where that height is going to go.
He'll be playing in Latvia or something like that.
And then he's going to die of a heart attack at 42.
Oh, come on now. That's low blow. That's a low blow or high blow.
It's not a low blow.
It's a high blow.
It's not a high blow. It's not a high blow.
It's real high blow. It's a tall blow.
It's the truth, man. Like, come on, you know, your body can't pump all that, you know. Hey, man, that's, you know.
Hey, did you watch the documentary about Andre the Giant? I think it might have been a 30 for 30. I thought it was a Bill Simmons thing.
It is a Bill Simmons thing. It was on HBO now. I haven't seen it.
Man, I need to look at that. That one I'm really interested in.
I need to watch it too, yeah. Yeah,
I gotta if it's HBO, I can get that on demand. I think.
Yeah,
I'm an HBO customer.
If you watched Finding Neverland, then you definitely have HBO. I think
everybody says Finding Neverland. I do too. It's Leaving Neverland.
Whatever.
I don't know. Is it because it's like Finding Nemo? Neverland. Yeah, I know you do.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, gosh.
I definitely want to go there, man. Like, I definitely want to go there.
Well, isn't it just like a big ranch, kind of in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, it's like all like – it's like basically abandoned now.
Is that chimp still alive?
No, Bubbles. Yeah, no, I don't think Bubbles is still alive. And they're like – you know, while he was still alive, they sent that thing to live somewhere. So I think Bubbles Bubbles was a C block.
Why are the kids playing with Bubbles? They gotta play with me.
That was the code word. Do you wanna come play with Bubbles?
Yeah, play with Bubbles.
Yeah. Gosh. So
Bubbles means whatever, champagne. Man. He's giving these kids champagne.
Mike's
in
innocent.
In the jacuzzi.
Mike's innocent.
Yeah, you think OJ's innocent too, don't you?
No. OJ definitely did it.
Yeah, well, he was exonerated too.
Yeah. Well, they actually have evidence OJ killed
yeah,
those
yeah,
people.
Yeah, DNA.
Yeah, they have DNA.
Now that Andre the Giant thing, though, man, I'm on top of that one. I got.
Yeah, I heard
that.
Andre the Giant, like when they were filming Princess Bride, like they went out one night. He like crushed like 42 beers.
I could see that for him. That'd be like drinking like a 40 for us, man. He's a big dude.
Me and the basket weaver, both we killed a case once, and it was like 24 beers each, and it was the worst night of my life.
Wait, where was that? What was that one?
That was at my first apartment with Sebastian.
Oh god!
And we were not legal at the time, and then we went downtown and I puked all in this diner. It was just a bad night.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, and then they left me to die in my bed. I definitely had alcohol poisoning. I should have died that night.
Oh, that's not funny. That's the,
no, it's not. But you know, I live to tell.
Yeah, no, tale. there was one time. Speaking of you know, alcohol poisoning or close calls, I was on a cruise ship with I was dating my now wife back then. So she was you probably within the first year or something. We were on a cruise. I went down because if you're a Florida resident, I think I still technically had my Florida residency. You get dirt cheap like cruises down there. And we went and we went to the Grand Cayman and we went to one of those, I don't know, it was like Carl's and Charlie's or Margaritaville, one of those types of places, and just sat there and just drank. Because I think the Grand Cayman, I think, is if you're not shopping for jewelry, and you know, I've never been a jewelry guy. And I've also never been the type to buy jewelry for my girlfriend or my wife, much to her chagrin. Or a beach, and I'm not much of a beach person either because I'm so pale. But there was really nothing for me to do there other than go drink. So I drank and I drank, I drank, and we came back to the boat, you know, pretty tipsy. And usually what I do when I drink, I just pound the water, right?
Right.
Well, I was drunk enough to where everything tasted like water, and I ended up polishing like, because, you know, you smuggle the booze on board, you know, for these things. So I put like some vodka in a water bottle, and I pounded that vodka. I don't know how much it was because my wife and I split it. But anyway, you know, of course, you know, I had been drinking. So within 20 or 30 minutes, I was blacked out. But what's rare, first of all, it's rare that I black out at all. Very rare. I could probably count on the times on one hand how many times I blacked out.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So that's super rare. So I blacked out. Not only did I black out, but I was conscious, like I was walking around. So like, Eric, the Bass Bali Lama, it was also on that cruise with me. He has all these pictures to this day. He has all these pictures of me, completely blasted. I have no recollection of this. Like I'm walking up to like groups and getting in pictures and like all this stuff, you know, doing stuff that I never do. And, and I had a 2-day hangover. It was like a 5-night cruise and I spent 3 nights in the cabin because of that hangover. So it was that night and then the next day and then the next day after that. That's how bad the hangover was. That's a mistake. Don't do that.
No fun. No fun, man.
No fun. Yeah. It's just every now and then. It probably every like once a month, Sam, we always talk about how we got hopelessly drunk at some point. Maybe we should go back and listen and reexamine our lives. I remember we did a whole segment on how to avoid a hangover by accident after one of these discussions.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, man. We're giving out nuggets, you know, all night tonight.
It's wisdom.
Yeah, it's just wisdom. You know, I don't think either one of us are heavy drinkers.
That's the problem, right? Because like then you get somewhere and you kind of lose track, and then boom, like you're under a table somewhere.
Yeah, I can handle it a lot better now. I guess I drink a little bit. I probably drank more in the past couple of years than I have, you know, my whole life. So I think I'm getting a lot more immune to it. But you know, every now and then you kind of go a little overboard where you know you're right on that line and you have another one, and that other one kind of sends you into a, you know, a tailspin. But you know, both of us are fans of hitting the hatch. You know, so we don't have that stuff in our stomach. So these are just things that we've learned along the way, and I feel like we're just sharing them.
Yeah, I mean, you have to pass your wisdom on to the generation so they can do better than you do, right?
That, or I feel like also on our group text, man, it's like once a month one of us is drunk at some point.
And just going,
firing off these texts. And
that Christmas thing for me, I was in rare form that night. Like I've never even gone back and looked at the text, but I know some of them. Oh man, that was bad.
You started like going at me about somebody about Pocahontas. And I was like, that doesn't make sense. And you're like, yes, it fucking does. Like, all right, you're gone.
You're like, what have you been drinking tonight, man?
Yeah. No, I knew. Cause you were like, yeah, I took a pill on X, and then I'm slamming booze. So, yeah, fun times.
Yeah.
Anyways, NBA. I think I think Golden State's going to pull it together. Boston seems like they had this long plane ride and they've been able to get it together. I guess they played Uno for 4 hours and now everyone's best friends again.
Which team is this? Sorry, I missed it.
Boston.
The Celtics. Oh, okay. They played Uno.
Yeah, Kyrie addressed the team. Basically said he's been an asshole. Him and Brad Stevens talked for about an hour on the plane, one on one, and then he addressed the team, and then they all played Uno for like 4 hours. It was from Boston to Golden State, and then they came out the next night and beat the crap out of Golden State. And you know, now they're on a little tear. Kyrie had a triple double tonight, and they got the W. So
now remember that was the team that I said would be able to topple Golden State this year if they could put that team to me is a sleeping giant. Now if they could hit their kumbaya, you know, they might be good to go. I think I don't even have it. I think Bovada had them at like maybe plus 1600. So they were in that next crop of teams. I think they still were a little higher than like a Denver. But yeah, man, that's good to know. It's a nice little tip for the bettors out there, I think.
Yeah, man, they're starting to pull it together. You could tell when they're playing free and they're all getting along, they are tough, you know, but when you see them start to, you know, get pissy with each other and, you know, and it all goes off Kyrie. When Kyrie is engaged and he's super into it, they're really tough to beat, man.
Well, that will be interesting in the playoffs, but you're still sticking with Milwaukee, right?
I'm sticking with Milwaukee just because they're going to have home court and
specifically to come out of the East, not to beat Golden State.
I think Golden State's going to win the whole thing, but don't sleep on Houston either, man. I think Houston is they've really putting it on. If they could stay healthy, you know, they were a game. I think they were a quarter away from probably winning it all last year. They just had an abysmal shooting night and Chris Paul was not on the floor. So, watch out for them.
Yeah. And what I like about the Rockets, I mean, they understand and they're, you know, a big analytical organization, which, you know, I could take or leave depending on the scenario. I'm a big analytic guy,
right,
but I don't think it trumps everything. What I will say is they are building a team specifically to combat Golden State in the playoffs. And so again, you know, when I said before about Golden State, I don't care if they're the eighth seed, they're still the favorites. And I say the same thing about Houston. Like they were, I think I checked in today and they were fourth in the Western Conference, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't care because I think that those are the two best teams in the conference. And if Houston wants to get to the finals, they are going to have to go through Golden State. And so do they sacrifice some regular season wins? Maybe don't match up as well against San Antonio. You know, they're really just trying to get past Golden State. So interesting. Plus, if they finish fourth,
Chris Paul was out for a month and whatever, you know, and James Harden kept him in the hunt, you know, because he went on a tear.
Right.
So we'll see.
Very good. All right, man, I think we can call it a show. I had one more thing to talk about, but for the life of me, I can't remember what it was. It was one of those. You know, not sports things anyway. So I'll think of it and I'll put it in the notes for next week. So don't go to Neverland, man. Don't go to Neverland.
You gotta leave
Neverland. You gotta stay away from Neverland.
Oh, man, I missed my chance.
You did miss your chance.
You know, maybe if I just had to push your parents, it would have put me in the right position. You know, I could be on a documentary at this point in my life. Yeah. Lying.
Jeez, man. Oh my gosh. No respect for these people.
You know, because here's the thing, man. Macaulay Culkin, you know, cute kid. He's got, you know, money. He's got all this. Could be a nice little, you know, cash cow for Mike. He never touched Macaulay. Never touched Corey Feldman. Never touched any of these people. Mm-hmm. They're all like, you know, we did prank calls and ate cotton candy. And then these turds are going to come out here and just be like, oh, he touched me and he spread my cheeks. Like, I don't want to hear that, man. I want facts. I want evidence.
They're giving you the facts, man. Dude's got a whole ring box.
Stories. No, man. That's Matt McAllister telling stories out there.
I'll redact the last name from that clip.
I'll let it ride. You know who you are.
I know who I am. I don't want people to know who I am, though.
That's true.
He's already assuming my identity. I don't need other people out there assuming my identity. That's true, man. That Neverland stuff, it's wild.
I'll never watch it. Our viewers or our listeners,
you're gonna live in blissful ignorance.
My ignorance.
Doing the moonwalk.
You'll see. They're gonna come out with stuff about these two clowns, and you'll see they're lying.
No way. No way. And by the way, I'm no longer convinced that Macaulay was spared. I'm not convinced. I still don't think so.
Talked about it.
Mm-hmm. So did the others.
Whatever.
So did the others. Gotta watch that documentary. You gotta be educated about this stuff.
Whatever.
All right. Well, everybody else, hey, watch sports next week. While Sam's watching Leaving Neverland, watch some sports.
Never.
And we'll talk more about it. All right. Everybody out there, hey, have a good week. Be good to people. That's all I got, man. Sam?
Be good.
Be good.